Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game. I know.
Welcome to the PAT Fantasy Football Podcast. Today is Monday, November 4th. It is past week 9. And we are looking forward to week 10. Andrew is joined with me from across several lakes because I am live in Boston. How you doing in the Windy City there, Andrew?
Well, I am glued to my television screen for this thrilling Monday night matchup, particularly because I'm down about 25 to our producer Garner with Evan Engram in the lineup still. So hoping for a little Monday night magic here.
Yeah, I need a little Monday night magic myself. The way my flight and Uber ride into the city went, I'm hoping that karma turns itself around and Michael Gallup can have a couple touchdowns here tonight. But yeah, it's been a wild week 9. So why don't we get into our kickoff question?
And this game is underway.
Obviously, trade deadlines are approaching in the fantasy football season, whether they're later this week or next week or the week after. But it's a big thing because you, after that, your roster is pretty much solidified. And, you know, unless there's a big waiver wire add, there isn't much else you're going to be able to do to change your roster. So, with these trade deadlines approaching, Andrew, who are you trying to get on your team at all costs? Who are some guys that you're really targeting, and what would you be offering for these players?
Yeah, so the big trade that I would be trying to make this week, if you still can, is Devin Singletary on the Bills. It seems obvious at this point after taking advantage of a good matchup against the Redskins. I know some people are saying positive game scripts would go in Frank Gore's favor, but the Bills really made the concerted effort to get Singletary the ball. He had 20 rush attempts, and I know he added some good receiving yards on top of that as well. So I think he's going to continue to get the volume of the work after a good performance, and he's got some juicy matchups coming up still. So that would be the one guy I'd be trying to get if you can from maybe a less savvy owner and try to tell him like, well, this could be a fluke when really we don't think it's going to be a fluke. We think this is a high upside guy to take you into fantasy playoffs. And I think you could say similar things about Ronald Jones as well. It's clear that he's been more explosive than Peyton Barber. So very similar situation there. Get these guys while you can.
Yeah. I'm targeting a running back as well, and that's Leonard Fournette. I think he's the perfect guy to target. He's coming off of a bad game. He's entering his bye week too, so the owner's not going to have him this week, which might make him a little bit more willing to let him go. And he's just got so much regression coming. He's got one touchdown this entire season, which is absolutely ridiculous with how many yards he's piled on. I just, you know, the Jacksonville red zone offense hasn't been quite as spectacular as you might think, but you know, it's not a particularly easy schedule for the Jags following the bye week for them, but it's not difficult either. It's not anyone that you would really be scared to play Fournette against. And he's one of those guys where he's guaranteed the workload. Now there is some injury concern from what he's shown in the past, but at this point there's no reason to think otherwise. At this point, I'd think about offering someone like, you know, David Montgomery or potentially Melvin Gordon, who again are sharing some of those workloads or have a bum of a head coach making terrible play calling decisions, and potentially trying to sell high on some of those guys, maybe add a wide receiver too, if you're able to. So again, there are a lot of players and ways you can go. We'll touch on Devin Singletary, in fact, a little bit later in the episode, but always be looking out to make sure you can improve your lineup as much as possible.
Yeah, and you always got to be on the lookout for those players too who completely shit the bed and you can't trust anymore. Maybe you've been holding on to them for too long thinking they're going to pay off, and they're clearly not. So let's cover a few of those in our DiGiorno Players of the Week, guys who did not deliver at all.
All right, so my guy is the teammate of the guy I just wanted to trade for, and that's DJ Chark. DJ Chark, do nothing. He did absolutely nothing in this London game against a not-so-great Houston secondary. He got targeted 9 times, which is great. He caught 4 of them for 32 yards. Like, how bad can you get? Like, you're the leading receiver in the AFC for yards, and you put up an absolute stinker?
Yeah, doo-doo. You said doo-doo. I liked your pun, but also the doo-doo big poop-poo as well. Oh my gosh. I don't think, you know, people are going to keep rolling Chark out there anyway, but the one guys you got to quit on at this point, if you can, Sam Darnold and Robbie Anderson. These guys were playing the fucking Dolphins, and Adam Gase still just, you know, hamstrung them with his bad play calling and bad coaching. It's a wonder that Peyton Manning was able to overcome Adam Gase's coaching in the past. Robbie Anderson had less than 50 yards. I thought he was going to be a lock for a 40-yard touchdown. And Sam Darnold just is regressing, and it sucks. There's nothing you can do with the Jets. It sucks.
All right. Yeah. The Jets are as big a dumpster fire as you can get right now. Again, obviously, couldn't have anticipated the jet plane burning
into the ground, unlike yours, which made it a safe way to Boston. So
thankfully.
Yes.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to mention, you know, about the trades before we get into our week 8 recap is one suggestion I have is just don't keep anyone off the trading block. Obviously, there are a number of players on your teams that I'm sure you're very fond of, but you always want to keep your options open. If someone like, you know, DJ Chark is on your do not touch list, and then someone comes and offers Julio Jones for him, well, then you're going to make that trade. But again, if you keep him off the trading block, then you might not get that offer regardless. But speaking of someone that potentially should be on your trading block, my matchup this week was Odell Beckham Jr. versus Chris Harris. Now, OBJ caught 5 catches on 6 targets for 87 yards. He wasn't necessarily shut down, but this is not what you wanted from OBJ all year. He hasn't been anything that you drafted him for. He's averaged double-digit targets for his career, but he's hit double-digit targets in just 3 of 8 games for the Browns. And that to me signals that Baker and Freddie Kitchens are not doing their job in getting their playmakers open and available to the quarterback.
Yeah, well, part of this matchup, though, is you saying Chris Harris could definitely shut OBJ down, right? So is there any positive spin on this? Like, it feels like 87 yards is actually improvement from what we've seen and hit from OBJ in previous games.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly is good. And if he had 87 yards each game, he would have a pretty good average across the whole year. But he's not getting the touchdowns anymore. He's not having those explosive 187-yard games that you would have expected in this high-flying Browns offense that has been less than high-flying, to say the least.
Yeah, I really wish they'd shake up the play calling and have Todd Monken do that. Granted, if you're OC, you should be able to help with the game planning and still get the ball deep, but it's really been we've said it before, this is a trash fire, but the fact that it's coming off of so much offseason hype makes it that much more smelly and painful, and just like they don't even want to talk about it. It's hard for me to talk about the Browns on this podcast.
So why don't we move on? What was the matchup you were looking for this past week?
Yeah, I would surprisingly rather talk about the Patriots at this point, who I've never been too fond of since they've been this dynasty. But We look at Patriots D, who have been historic from a fantasy perspective, on pace to outdo the 85 Bears. But Lamar Jackson, as we've talked about a lot on this pod and continue to say how much we've talked about him, really was changing the narrative about the Patriots defense. I think it's unreal the way Baltimore imposed their will in this game and did a lot of things in the, you know, pistol and full house formations that you see more in Madden than you see in real football, and using those to create space. Greg Roman got his shine in primetime, and I think in some sense the Pats D was exposed here. I think that, you know, Lamar Jackson's such an athlete that it doesn't scare me to continue starting the Patriots defense. And I think because of how crazy they were, you've got to hold on to them through their bye week, of course. But once you get towards those fantasy playoffs, there might be a better matchup out there in some of the weeks.
Yeah, this game on the Lamar Jackson side was a wet dream for Lamar Jackson truthers. Just the way he sliced through that defense with his rushing ability. This was only the second time this year that the Patriots defense scored single-digit points in a game this year, which is absolutely ridiculous. They've scored at least 14 points in every other game this season. But people are saying that the playbook is out on how to exploit the Patriots defense, but no other team has a weapon like Lamar Jackson at this point. And granted, the Patriots will play Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and the Cowboys offense, who have all been fairly efficient, but this was a great game. I really hope that both these teams meet in the playoffs, because it would be exciting to see if Belichick does anything different in a second matchup against Lamar.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting, and they're going to need to be able to game plan for him, because I don't think that the Patriots can really last in a shootout. But speaking of shootouts, let's pivot to what I think was the most exciting game from yesterday, and that's the shootout that you were most interested in.
Yeah, so that was obviously Bucks versus Seahawks, which finished 40-34 in overtime with Russell Wilson's fifth touchdown pass of the game, which was absolutely insane. I keep thinking about the pre-draft process and how I was just staying away from Russell Wilson the whole offseason, because there was no way he was able to sustain his insane touchdown percentage. But he has been able to do that and more. And, you know, each team scored a touchdown in the first 7 minutes of the game, which is sort of how this went. Which is how the game went the rest of the way. So it was an exciting game. Seahawks had a couple chances at the end to win it in regulation, but ultimately pulled out the win in overtime, and a lot of fantasy goodness across the board.
Yeah, I've got a couple questions for you from this. Can you imagine what Russell Wilson could do if this was a quote unquote pass first offense?
Oh, well, you know, that's the crazy thing. You know, it's interesting because, like you said, it is a run
first narrative. Just BS.
It is a run first offense, and he's just so efficient. Like, I would be, to your point, I would be curious to know if his efficiency stays at the same level if they are passing the ball 60% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it would be interesting to see how consistent he's been with the yards per attempt and the touchdown percentage as well. He's had these blow up games because he can do it, but he's had some other down games as well. But when it's Russell Wilson, you know that you can take the good with the bad. My second question for you is, are we done with this Evans versus Godwin 1A, 1B argument? I think it's pretty obvious that Mike Evans is the 1A now.
Yeah, I have to concede defeat on this one, unfortunately. And Godwin, as great as he's been, Evans is just turning back into the wide receiver one potentially on the rest of the season that everyone was expecting him to be. Now, I think there will be games where Godwin has a blow-up performance and Evans is a little bit quieter, and I just don't think there will be as many games in which both of them will have a monster performance.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that Godwin is good. Like, he's still a really talented player. I just think it's a good thing to bring up as to how reactionary the fantasy community gets when we see, like, a small sample size where one player is outperforming another. And we're like, oh, well, would you trade Mike Evans to get Chris Godwin? And some people would be like, well, yeah, look at what's happened so far. And then obviously the script is flipped the past few weeks. So it's definitely up and down sometimes with Evans, but he's still going to get you to those top tier numbers. So I'm going to move to my shootout, which, you know, I think I would have locked up Seahawks Bucks as a shootout if you hadn't picked them first. Because I ended up going with Texans-Jaguars, and I think, as we said, when you go to London, anything can happen, and a lot of times it becomes an ugly game because of travel, and that's what happened with, you know, the Jaguars here. They just didn't show up. The Texans were able to just run all over them with Carlos Hyde, and I don't think the Jaguars really got much pressure either, so... And not much to say in terms of a shootout for this. We already talked about DJ Chark sucking. Minshew's probably going to hit the bench now. So if you do have Minshew, start looking for good quarterback options on the waiver wire. And it's just a little disappointing that we couldn't see more from the Jaguars. But we did get a good performance from DeAndre Hopkins. So that's a... you know, another case of a talented wide receiver regressing to his talent.
Yeah, this, like you said, was certainly a one-sided affair, but a fairly entertaining game for the most part. I don't know if you saw, it was a little funny, J.J. Watt tweeting during the game about preferring 9 cups of coffee versus 3 cups of coffee when the Texans were up 9-3 against the Jaguars. But just... Classic JJ trying to be a good folk in the community there. But moving on to the player that I was really interested in looking at this week, and that's Josh Jacobs, who looked electric on the first drive and throughout the game. He's got such a great jump cut to, you know, run and then jump to the outside, pick up 10, 12 yards. And this, he had 2 touchdowns for the third time this year. And it's kind of funny because all of his touchdowns have come in the games where he scored 2 touchdowns. So he's a bit all or nothing, but he compiled, I believe, like 738 carries, it seemed, on the day, because they were just feeding him the ball play after play. He is as much a workhorse as there is. Now, the thing I worry about with him at this point is the lack of work in the passing game. It seems like he's more the Derrick Henry, Sony Michel type in that we'll get worked in every once in a while, but Jalen Richard is really their passing downs back for that team.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we should have known going into this that if we picked 2 players from the same team, that one was going to be significantly better than the other and take a lot away from the other player. So going right into me doubling down on the Raiders, thinking they're pretty spicy. I mean, they did win this game, if memory serves me correctly, right?
Correct.
So, and it was their first home game back, so that's exciting for them. But Tyrell Williams was really nowhere to be found for the most part. He did get 48 yards, but was only on like 3 or 4 receptions. So not what we were expecting. And it shows that you got to be fluid at the flex. And like I said last week, he's a flex until he's not. And after this game, you wouldn't want him in the flex right now. So we got to compare him to some other matchups in your lineups moving forward.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I actually disagree. I think he still can be at least a flex candidate, and that's because...
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I'm just saying he's not as automatic in my mind as he was a week prior.
Yeah, I mean, this was his first game without a touchdown all season in the games that he has played, but He does get a matchup this Thursday night, which segues well into my potential shootout for the week, and that is Raiders versus Chargers. Now, you mentioned earlier that Gardner Minshew could potentially be going to the bench and Nick Foles returning. I actually think Derek Carr could be a great fill-in option if you are in a situation like that, or maybe you've got Tom Brady who's got an upcoming bye, or Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, because over the past 3 weeks, Derek Carr has thrown multiple touchdowns in each of them. He's the quarterback 11 on a points per game basis over that stretch as well. So he's not, you know, a Superman player at this point, but he'll get you 20 points a game right now. At least he has been the past several weeks. And I think that makes for a great Thursday night matchup against this Chargers offense, who finally seems to have a running game, eclipsed 40 rushing yards for the first time in what seemed like forever. And both teams seem to be finding a bit of a groove. It's an AFC West showdown, and pretty much whoever loses this game is potentially out of the race at that point, although they'll still probably show up in those in the hunt graphics that all the show.
There's like 9 teams in there.
Yeah, but a lot at stake on multiple levels for this game.
It's interesting that you bring this one up as a shootout, because I would like to see it. I mean, I'd like to see every game as a shootout, right? But it's not that way. When you look at this, do you think that when you think about, you know, this last week, the Chargers just played the Packers, who we thought were on fire on offense, and kind of shut them up. So what's your take on the fact that there is a defense on the other side of the ball that seems to be gaining some traction as well, going up against the Raiders offense?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that was potentially a fluky thing. The Chargers did shut down the Bears for the most part the week before, but as we've mentioned several times at this point, the Bears offense is nothing to be afraid of, really. So I think the Raiders have enough firepower with Williams and Jacobs and Darren Waller. Hunter Renfrow is coming into his own too. So I would actually, you know, think the Chargers end of it might prevent this from being a shootout potentially if their offense can't get into a groove. Again, Philip Rivers has played okay, but not nearly as consistent as he's been in the past.
Yeah, I think looking at this one, and because it's on Thursday, I'm more willing to bet money on the over in my shootout that I'm watching for compared to yours. And my shootout is Panthers versus Packers. Now, like you said, I think this Chargers-Packers game could have been a fluke with a Midwest team traveling west. And then looking at the matchup of who they play, the Panthers, they were able to go up against what I said was a quote-unquote stout Titans defense and run roughshod on them. And a lot of that, of course, was because of Christian McCaffrey. And the Packers statistically have struggled against running backs. So I think that it's going to be a clash of Titans in terms of who the players that we think of as MVP candidates. So CMC and Aaron Rodgers having to keep up with that Panthers rushing attack, I'm pretty excited to see what happens there.
Yeah, it is supposed to be pretty cold, I think, down in the 20s on Sunday in Green Bay. So I doubt that will affect much of the game, if any, but we're starting to get to that time of year with the games. But this game certainly does have some shootout potential, as you mentioned, with, again, the offensive firepower on both sides of the ball and neither defense really playing, you know, particularly well. They've shown a little bit in times, but nothing tremendous at this point. But a matchup that I'm looking forward to with a very good defense and a very good defensive line is the Steelers defensive line versus the Rams offensive line, because I think this has the potential to sway the game in one way or another. Now, Jared Goff is someone who's been under the microscope from a fantasy perspective for several weeks now, and he did what he was supposed to do against the Bengals and the Falcons, but Now he's got to play a tough Steelers defense. And if the Rams offensive line, which has not played well this year, can't hold up against TJ Watt and company, then Goff is just screwed this game, quite frankly.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's become the trend is something that everyone knows that Goff is not good under pressure, but if he's given time, then he can work the playbook that Sean McVay has written and really win games for them. But they've struggled. I think that, you know, normally we would look at this matchup. If you're not looking at it closely, you're probably looking at the Steelers as a huge underdog against the Rams. But, you know, since we're looking and covering this every week, we know the Rams aren't who they used to be. And it could be a bit of a trap game for them, honestly. I like this matchup, like you said. And it's making me consider the Steelers as a streaming option to just keep rolling with them. They've had double-digit fantasy points every week since I think they played the Bengals. And I don't know if the Rams scare me as much as they should be.
It came out today that Brandon Cooks, too, is without a timetable to return. And he suffered his second concussion of the year before their bye week. So they'll be down another playmaker. Granted, Cooks hasn't done much this year, but the Rams are not what the Rams used to be. Todd Gurley is not what he used to be, and they're not putting up 40-plus points a game anymore. So I would be a little cautious just knowing that it's possible that the Rams go off, but the Steelers have played well enough and shown well enough. Adding Minkah Fitzpatrick has been a huge boost to their secondary, and I would trust them at this point as a defensive unit for fantasy.
Perfect. Thank you for that advice for this week. I do have Ravens against Bengals, so I still feel a little conflicted, but I digress. And speaking of matchups, I just put two teams in here, but I think what I'm most interested between these two teams is the coaches. And can these coaches pull their head out of their own ass? It's Matt Patricia from the Lions versus Matt Nagy from the Bears. So a Matt versus Matt matchup, This game is in the dregs of the NFC North. These teams are just going to be duking it out in such a weird way. Like, I do think the Lions are a little bit feistier, but I'm curious to see if the Bears can do anything against this Lions defense. Like, the spicy Raiders just got a win against the Lions. So it's going to be – I feel like most of the schedule looks ugly, and I think this game looks ugly too. But I'm a little more interested in it just being a fun game to watch in like a weird, gross way.
Yeah, I think if the Bears are able to do anything, it's going to be running the ball well. Obviously, we mentioned Josh Jacobs earlier, who just had a huge game against this Lions defense. But, you know, with Matt Nagy's desire to run the ball more, that's helped Montgomery quite a bit. But I wouldn't trust anything in the Bears passing offense to do anything remotely good. On the flip side, I wouldn't trust anything on the Lions side of the rushing attack to do anything remotely good. And
if the Bears defense is tired enough, maybe Matt Stafford can overcome it, but it could also be like a 17-12 game. Like, and then it's just,
yeah, it very much could be. If I'm, maybe a daily fantasy player or, you know, making a start sit decision, I might try and avoid this game as much as possible just because there is such a high probability that it ends with not a lot of scoring, both in real football aspects and in fantasy aspects.
Yeah. I think the one bright spot in this matchup, like, and you should just play him regardless, is Kenny Golladay. I know it might look a little tough against the Bears, Eddie Jackson, whoever's out there in the secondary, but I think if anyone's going to get a good fantasy day in your regular like redraft leagues, don't be scared to keep starting Kenny Golladay. You kind of have to at this point. Now let's move on to the player that you're going to be watching, who I are actually already mentioned.
Yeah, that's Devin Singletary. Again, this is it's similar to why I was looking at Josh Jacobs this past week, but he's been so explosive, so fun to watch. He finally got the opportunity that everyone thought he deserved on Sunday. And I want to see it happen again because he out-carried Gore for the first time this season. And I want to see if it's, again, a true changing of the guard for the Buffalo Bills, because Gore has been everywhere forever. And every time you think he's just going to go away, he doesn't. And he just sits there. Now, there's nothing about the Cleveland defense that scares me. And Singletary has made a lot of his explosive plays in the passing game. He had a great screen play against the Redskins this past week, but he, for, you know, from all perspectives, seems to be the guy at this point, and hopefully that continues. I want to see him just tear it up again.
I think he will, because we're getting at that point in the season where Frank Gore has to be, you know, breaking down a little bit. They've given him a lot of carries. I tried looking back at game logs from last year to see if his carries went down over the season, and I don't think they really did, but, you know, he was never last year or this year getting 20 carries a game. He's like a 10 to 15 carry a game guy. And I don't think that's enough for him to even see the end zone, especially after this game against the Redskins last week. They gave him multiple tries at the goal line to score. And I'm sure that, you know, people who love watching Frank Gore throughout his career would love to see him score at age 40 or whatever, however old he is now. But it just didn't happen. And I think if the Bills want to win more convincing football games, that they have to keep running with the hot hand. So I am higher on Singletary than you, I think. I'm ready to keep running him out there at this point because I think he can keep the momentum going. A player that I am keeping my eyes on, and this is back to that flex conversation that we're talking about in, like, with Tyrell Williams involved, Zach Pascal. Now, he had a pretty good game against the Steelers, despite the Steelers' defense having a great fantasy day. And a lot of times, you know, teams have their studs that they don't want to trade, like you mentioned. And if you're one of those people where you're like, I've got my core, I just need to figure out a few other positions on a week-to-week basis, you're probably looking for a flex. And I think Zach Pascal has an opportunity, and it'll be interesting to see if, on a Colts offense that does like to spread it around, if he's going to get more targets, like I think Frank Reich mentioned, because T.Y. Hilton, it sounds like he's still going to be out for a couple more weeks. If he's out, then I would definitely look at Pascal as an option. They're playing the Dolphins this week, and I think that the Colts offense is better than the Jets offense at this point. So we couldn't see a ton from them throughout the entire game last week, but we did see Jamison Crowder get big fantasy points early in that game. So Pascal, a good flex option given the matchup.
Yeah, I think a big part of this too could be the health of Jacoby Brissett. Now, he's currently week to week with an MCL-ish injury, according to Frank Reich. So, you know, Brian Hoyer came in and played pretty well at the end of the game there for the Colts. But I think Jacoby Brissett is obviously the superior talent, and I'd be a lot more comfortable playing Zach Pascal if Brissett was in there, because if he's not, they might just end up running Marlon Mack to the ground against this terrible Miami Dolphins defense.
So since we brought them both up, would you rather start Tyrell Williams against the Chargers, since that was your, you know, the shootout you're calling for, or Zach Pascal? I mean, assuming you can get both.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Tyrell all day, every day. Pascal has, you know, Eric Ebron, Jack Doyle, Chester Rogers, all these other guys that I don't think he separates himself enough from the pack, whereas Tyrell has, for the most part, been a go-to guy for Derek Carr, and I think they'll be able to move the ball well enough against the Chargers defense to put them into some scoring opportunities and potentially restart his scoring streak once again.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think as we talk about this from like a waiver wire ad or something like that, and you're struggling with the flex, is like I mentioned, more of where I'd see Pascal. I would go with Tyrell too, just because we have a little more of sample size of success. But Tyrell is probably not available in as many leagues. So something to think about there. Anything else you want to talk about in this episode?
Hopefully we both come out on top in each of our matchups this week. And we hope everyone that's listening to this comes out on top as well. You can follow me on Twitter at Sam Hoppin. You can follow Andrew at Andrew Mackins. And you can follow Garner at Garnther and the entire pod, of course, at Pod After TD. And with that, the long distance kick is good.
See you guys.
He's walking. He's walking to the three. He's at the two. And the cat is in the CDW red zone. CDW, people who get it now, a policeman, a state trooper has come on the field. And the cat runs into the end zone. That is a touchdown. And the cat is elusive, kind of like Barkley and Elliott. But he didn't know where to go. Look at, they're trying to corner him. And they got him in the end zone. There are state troopers all around this cat, which now climbs up into the stands. And the fans are running for their line. Now it goes back on the field again. And it's running in the back of the end zone. And it runs up the tunnel.